everybody. Here we go again. What do you reckon of the jingle? It's all right, isn't it? Here we are, number four, still going strong. Still, what's the word? A bit paranoid about whether we're doing a good job of this or not. Hence why we're always talking about our crap skills when it comes to hosting podcasts. But who cares? We're having a laugh. And Rye last week told us that if we make 20, we're in the top 10. And that'll be good enough for us. And we're nearly a quarter of the way there. So thank you very much for tuning in to another fourth episode of Alcohol Uncensored, where we bang on for roughly 45 minutes, might be longer, might be a little bit less, about the benefits and what starts going right when you decide to stop drinking. So I am Ian, and I am nearly 6 years alcohol-free, as they say in the trade, which means I've not drank since the 29th of May 2020. Middle of lockdown, sick as a chip, could see the writing was on the wall and just thought, I've had enough of this. I'm going to do something different. Stopped drinking, quickly joined an alcohol-free community about 5 or 6 months later. And here I am now, hosting my own with the one and only head honcho, Kelly. Hello, Kelly. How are you?
Hi, Ian. I'm good. Good. Nice to be here. I feel actually so much better this week. Do you know, January has been, it's been a bit of a drag for me. Like, my mood has been pretty low. And you know, I'm quite proud of myself because I've had to just get up and get out my runs and get to work and do community stuff and do my training course that I'm doing, and I've just got up and done it. So this week my mood's lifted a good bit, and I feel much better for it. And I've not needed or wanted a drink, which is the best thing. So I am coming up for 5 months sober. I'm 43 and I've got 3 amazing boys, and I'm just dropping that in there with the focus of trying to introduce ourselves a little bit more as we go on. I was at a meeting the other night, actually an AA meeting the other night, and someone described the AA programme as their prescription to their illness. And I thought, Joe, that's quite good. And I feel like that's what I've been doing all month, picking up my prescription, doing what I needed to do, and not wanting to drink or needing to drink. So long way to say I'm good this week.
Yeah, I think we're fine now, we're fit, aren't we? And we never really talked about how this was going to go when we did it. We just thought, you know what, we're going to start doing some podcasts because it's a way of getting more people known about Alcohol Uncensored, what it's about, and, you know, inviting more people into the community. And that's all it was. But as we're fine now, we're fit, I think me and you were a good mix because I think, you know, we're coming at it from very different angles, but we've both got one thing in common, which is we're both very positive about what happens when you stop drinking.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you know, once we are talking, there's no stopping us, is there? So,
yeah, exactly.
Can I tell you quickly before we introduce our guest what's happened to me today? And anyone who listened to last week will think that bugger doesn't do any work. When does he actually do any work? But today I met with a good mate of mine because last week I was telling you about a game of paddle that I played last Friday.
Yeah,
and this morning I was up with the larks at 5:30, did all my usual sort of healthy shit. Story shouldn't swear, and then went and met a mate an hour away in the middle of nowhere, and it was snowing, and we did a run, and he's a mate who I know from work, so we kind of call it work. We said, well, we'll both work for ourselves, so we can do these sort of things. Took ourselves off for a run for an hour and a half, and then had a full English breakfast for £6. Where can you get a full English breakfast for £6? And a cup of coffee for £1.50. So we had two. Anyway, that's not the story. But so we just had a really good chat all the way up, all the way back. Proper men's health stuff, if you know what I mean. Just like a couple of middle-aged, well, beyond middle-aged blokes just chewing the fat. But again, just came back and just felt absolutely brilliant. And it's just stuff like that where even now, sort of nearly 6 years down the line, I just think, there's not a cat in hell's chance I'd be doing this, you know. If I was still drinking, it just wouldn't happen. And I get a real buzz from doing stuff like that.
Do you talk about your alcohol-free journey with your colleague?
I do, actually, I don't call it an alcohol-free journey because I think that's something that we do in the community, isn't it? If you're not in these sort of communities, that's a bit of a sort of, great stuff, isn't it?
You know what I mean?
I do. And then he's the sort of guy. I mean, he'll have the odd drink now and again, but he's cut down a lot. Me and him, we were drinkers in our past, but he's very much clued up on sort of his mental health as well as his physical health. And we have some very open and honest chats. And that's what I've got quite good at, you know, is just being able to open up and have those sort of conversations. So, it was just another one of those moments where I just, moments of clarity where you just think, I'm so glad I'm doing this. Do you know what I mean?
So I'm doing a counselling skills course just now. And I just love that. I've been in groups before and kind of not mentioned like my sobriety or the community or anything, and there's kind of no discussion about it, no one mentions anything, and I was talking about the community and my sobriety, and before I knew it, everybody had their own kind of, oh, I've been trying to take a break, oh, I'm doing dry January, or oh, I've read this book. And it's amazing actually the amount of people that are out there doing bits and pieces to try and change the relationship with alcohol, but yes, not really talking about it, because it's a bit of that kind of, oh, I'm going to get judged here. And it's just when someone opens up and starts talking about it, the conversation flows, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. Speaking of conversation flowing, if we don't introduce our guest soon, she's going to bugger off, isn't she? She's going to have a bugger off. So we need to introduce our guest. Lauren is in the Alcohol Uncensored community, and I know that she is coming up 2.5 years alcohol-free, and she is ultra cool. And we're going to find all that out as we go to our chat for the next while. Lauren, hello, how are you?
I'm good. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we are really good. Thank you very much. Now, I'm going to let everyone know Lauren was a bit frazzled when she first came on. She just got in. She had a hectic day. But I know that's not going to be a problem because Lauren can handle herself.
I do like a chat. Well,
you do like a chat. Yeah, yeah. And yeah, thank you for prompting me. Kelly just put something in the text. I'm sorry, Kelly. I don't know whether that's going to embarrass us and
you make us look even more amateur.
But she said, I forgot that she is an amazing Zoom host. So I was going to come to that. But yeah, you're absolutely right. She is an amazing Zoom host in the community as well. Anyway, enough from me. Lauren, what we're going to hopefully do is have a bit of a chat with you, find out about your journey, talk a bit about what life was like for you before you decided to stop drinking, what it was like in trying to stop drinking and how you overcame your challenges and where you find yourself now. So if we break that down, probably the first thing to do, if you don't mind, please, is just tell us a bit about you, your family scenario, et cetera, and where you were before you actually decided to stop drinking.
So, well, I'm a mum. I've got four daughters from the age, like 22, 21, 13 and 12, I'm married to Simon, got a crazy dog and mad cats. I work in a school, not as a teacher, I sort of do administration and safeguarding. So my job is quite busy and full on. The days are a bit mad. Yeah, so I haven't had any alcohol for 2.5 years, like you said. And it's not always been an easy journey for me. I found it quite difficult. I didn't always think that I had a problem because I drank like everybody else, didn't I? You know, I didn't really question it. Only, I'd say, the last sort of 5 years kept thinking, oh, you know, sometimes I feel like I drink maybe a little bit more than everybody else. And, you know, also wasn't feeling that great. I've always struggled a bit with my mental health. And every now and then you read something about alcohol, mental health. And I was like, oh, you know, maybe it's not that. Maybe it's just middle age. You know, I'm going to be 50. It's the menopause. It's all these things. It's everything except alcohol, isn't it? Mm-hmm. And then I'd like do dry January or sober October. And most of the time never finish the month. I don't think I've ever actually finished the month. And find it really tough. But then there's always an excuse. You know, I live a really busy, hectic life. And everybody around me does drink. And, you know, we had pubs and restaurants for years and years. So we were in that area. You know, you can always find a mate to drink with at the bar when you're the one standing on the other side of the bar, you know. So I didn't think anything about it. I didn't feel great. Didn't like myself very much. And I started to notice things like my sleep was bad, that I would drink and then not like remember how much I drank until the next morning and go, God, you know, I had a bottle of wine last night and it was Tuesday. You know, I think, oh, but it's fine. Doesn't everyone do that after they've had a bad day, you know? And I very much use alcohol as a reward. You know, I've got four girls. They're really busy. My job's really busy. You know, I do everything for everybody else, including the dog. I deserve my glass of wine. It's all I've got left. I'm a harassed mum, you know? And that was my kind of narrative. And I do quite a lot of running, and I've always done running. And I think running's one of the things that kept me in drinking, which sounds weird. But, you know, I would like drink two bottles of wine on a Saturday very easily, wake up not feeling that great, and just smash it out 10K, because that would get rid of the bit of shame and guilt that I'd have, or get rid of the hangover, basically. And then I was like, oh, there's nothing wrong with me because I can run 10K and then drink two bottles of wine and off I go. And I'm ready. And my house was clean and my kids were where they're supposed to be. And from the outside, everything looked okay. It was just inside my head. I just felt like something wasn't right. I just knew in my gut something wasn't right. And, there were parts of me that like questioning, is this it? Is this like how life's supposed to be now? My girls are growing up and all I really have to look forward to is a glass of wine. It just started to not sit that well with me. And so I would question it, but then I'd push it away and say, oh, don't be silly. Everyone else would do. What will you do if you don't drink? Like, and you deserve it. And, how will you cope? I won't cope. I can't cope with my kids if I don't have a glass of wine. I'm not falling down the staircase. I'm not smashing my car. I haven't hit anybody. Everyone's done their homework. Do you know what I mean? So I just like, I'd have these thoughts and then I'd rationalize it. Or I'd see an article in a newspaper that said that wine's good for you. And I'm like, look, I'm okay. I'm doing, or I'd see something on socials like people that are like run a marathon and then they're having a big bottle of champagne. I'm like, you see, it's okay, So I was in this constant like mental loop, but I did sort of start trying things. I'd try like the dry Januaries and the sober Octobers. I'd have all these rules. I know we always talk about the rules, like I won't drink Monday to Thursday, and I won't drink wine anymore because wine is like a strong short drink. I'll have gin and tonic in a tall glass with lots of mixer. And then like two gin and tonics, then I'm straight back in the wine again. It was just this constant like mental loop. And so I just slowly started to question it. And another thing that happened was like whenever I met somebody that didn't drink, I was weirdly curious about them. I was like a little bit of a stalker. I'd like, oh, what are they doing? How do they do it? They look like they're having fun. But in my mind, just say, no, I can't do it. So that's where I ended up like 2.5 years ago, deciding that I'm going to do Sober October. And that was after quite a drink heavy summer because I don't work the summers because of school. And I just didn't feel great. And I thought, okay, we'll just have a break. We'll just like do a little reset, just a small little reset. We'll be fine. There's no problem here. I've just been under a lot of stress, a lot of pressure. It's just a bad patch. So I tried to do the Sober October. I actually started the 28th of September and it was really hard. I was like agitated. I was thinking about it all the time. I was like, oh, this is not fine. What do I do with myself? My evenings were really difficult. Like I just felt like out of sorts. Like I had a scratchy jumper on. It just didn't feel right. And then a friend posted on her Instagram that she was 100 days alcohol free. And it was part of the OTI group. And I just messaged her and I said, what are you doing? And she's like, yeah, I'm 100 days alcohol free. It's the best thing I've ever done. I was like, really? And so she just sparked something in me. And then she gave me a link. And I thought, I'll just have a look. But there is no way on God's earth I am joining a community. It's not happening. I'm not speaking to strange people. And there's nothing to see here because there's nothing wrong with me. And then I just started going on the Zooms and listening and hearing people's stories and listening to the podcast. And in every single podcast and every Zoom and every book I read, a big book that was really important was The Sober Diaries. I could really see myself in her, that mommy drinking wine culture thing. And then I thought, oh, actually, maybe there's more to this than just liking a wine a little bit, So that's how I ended up in the community and like trying not to drink.
Isn't it amazing how like you all those like signposts that you've just described there, all those like nagging thoughts that were in your head, and yet constantly we're sort of justifying them out. We're saying, ah, yeah, but everyone drinks. It's all right. It's just what we do. Come round again. This is ridiculous. I shouldn't be doing this anymore. I've not got a problem. Well, I've got a problem, whatever. But just that noise, isn't it? That circular sort of constantly all the time having these debates with yourself, and you know it's bad for you. You know it's knocking hell out of you. You know it's making you anxious. You know it's affecting your sleep. You know that it's making you grumpy. You know it's spoiling your relationships. And yet you keep sort of talking to yourself, thinking, yeah, but it's all right. It's all right. And it's just that hold it's got on you, isn't it? But once you've realized that and accepted it, then it does change.
Definitely. I mean, there were so many signs and things, and it was basically my older girls that started saying passing comments that really started to like contradict like the things. Like I would say, oh, I had too much to drink, and then everyone would say, oh, but I had loads of drink on Friday. We had a bad week. We deserved it. Oh, these kids, here we are freezing to death at football. We're all gonna have wine later. But my older girls used to start commenting about it. particularly my one daughter, and she has no filter. So she's called me Drunk Lauren. And she'd say, well, like on Sunday morning, I'd say, what it would be something that we'd spoken about to do in the week or whatever. And she'll say, well, last night, Drunk Lauren, she said that we're gonna do X, Y, and Z. And I think to myself, I can't remember that conversation, or I can
Yeah.
remember like snippets of it.
Yeah.
And it wasn't like anyone told me not to drink or told me to stop drinking. It was like a bit of a joke. But in her eyes, I could see it wasn't really. And it sounds weird, but I started to get upset because every card that anybody gave me was about wine. And every gift I got was for wine. And everybody would say, oh, don't worry, Lauren's coming. Have you got enough wine? You know? And so it started to like not sit well with me. You know, it's like death by a thousand cuts. Yeah. And then the last week that when I decided I'm going to do the Sober October, my eldest daughter, she was working in a domestic violence center, and it's part of her internship with her law degree. And she came home one night and she was really distressed. She had a very difficult day. And I was standing in the kitchen, like you always do, you know, cooking, glass of wine. And she came in, she was upset, and she's like, oh, hello. I said, that's fine. Go sit in the dining room. We'll talk about it. I'm just going to get my wine. And there was like a little flash in her eyes. She didn't say a word. There was just this look in her eyes. And then we went and sat at the dining room table. And she was telling me, and I was like, I had only had like 1.5 glasses of wine. And every time I topped up my glass, she had this look in her eye. And that was the day that I was like, something's not right here. That's when it really, those negative thoughts were stronger than the, well, you deserve this. Everyone's doing it. And that kind of like started me. But it is hard because you rationalize and justify all of it. And all the people around you do it too. They're like, oh, there's nothing wrong with you. You're fine. You're fine.
And that's it. To the outside world, it would have looked fine. It's just, I think it's like one drink for someone is too much than it is for someone else, if that makes sense. Like, it's not really about how much you're drinking either. It's about how much it makes you feel and everyone round about you. I just
Yeah.
wanted to pick up on something you said about should I have a drink? Should I not have a drink? Like, is this person thinking this? Is this person thinking that? And a lot of the time on the Zooms, you get members come on and they're like, God, am I just always going to think about not drinking? Because
Yes.
that can drive you crazy at the start as well, doesn't it? But it does get easier. But I think it's so easy to forget how busy our heads were when we wanted to stop drinking. It's like that whole fade and effect bias that William Porter talks about. Like, you start to then think, oh God, my head's too noisy. When in actual fact, it's actually getting quieter than what it used to be.
Exactly. So, like as you will both know, like when I gave up, I was not a very happy person and I really struggled. I used to really. I moved from drunk Lauren to angry Lauren quite simply for 6 months.
I've got to come in here because I've written down three things. There's three things that I think about you, Lauren. Do you know what the first one is? Just touching on what you just mentioned there.
My angry Lauren.
Well, you are levitating with rage.
I do levitate with rage. Yes, so not very well, though.
You've got to tell people about your levitating with rage. Because I always remember the first time when I was hosting a Zoom and you came on. And you were, I can't do a South African accent, so I'm not even going to try. But you said, I am so angry, I am levitating with rage. And I just broke out laughing because I just thought it was, and I shouldn't have been laughing because you were clearly angry. And I was thinking, oh, she's going to think I'm a right sarky bugger because I'm just laughing at her. But you were very angry and you were
was
levitating with rage.
very angry and I couldn't figure out why I was, and I was angry for a long time, like everything annoyed me. And I even remember at one point thinking, what is the point of not drinking where I'm full of rage? You know, I'm finding life really difficult. I'm finding being a mom really difficult. I think about drinking, not drinking, drinking, not drinking. Constantly got a podcast. It was hard work. Like there would be people in the Zooms like, oh, I'm 4 weeks and it's just my best life. And I'm just, you know, so blessed. And I'm like, I don't know what planet you on, lady, because that's not happening for me. Like I want to kill everybody and life is not that great.
I think it's important to say that, though. I think it's important to actually be clear with people and say when you stop drinking, all these emotions start coming out, and there isn't a cork that you can sort of put in like I used to when I reach for the fridge and I have a couple of bottles of beer just to sort of calm me down because
Nothing
I
else,
had a
yeah.
crap day. Everything comes out, doesn't it? And there's no place for it.
No, and the big thing for me is that I really struggle. Tiredness is a thing for me, and overwhelm is massive. So Like, as soon as I feel overwhelmed, like, it's an everyday thing in my home. Like, I have four children, you know, they're all busy. Like, we're quite a loud, busy family. At that point, I was running pubs and things. Now I work in a school. Like, life is overwhelming, just even if you've got one child or no children, you know. And I could never cope with that feeling. It made me really, like, frightened. And so then I would have a drink, you know. And three out of four of my children all had colic. And so they used to scream at night. So I used to dread 5 o'clock. So I'd have a glass of wine just to calm my nerves, calm your baby down, you know. So it's almost like PTSD with the witching hour. You're not supposed to say that. You know, you're supposed to be all grateful. Children are lovely. We love them. We're so blessed. But, you know, it's hard. And I don't think it gets spoken of. And then not drinking is hard because I'm sure you, if people listen to your podcast, there's a reason people drink. It's because it works. You know, and people don't talk about that enough. And, you know, we're not idiots. It did the job. You know, it quietened the noise. It stopped us feeling overwhelmed. It made us relax initially. For me, it was like a calming, okay, take a breath, have a sip of wine. Right, what's your problem? What needs to be done? Okay, let's do this. You, who's next? Like, let's cook dinner. Don't worry about that. We'll sort this out. You know, the dog's been sick. Don't, I'll clean that later. Where's When it's all happening at once and I didn't have a drink, I felt totally overwhelmed and a bit panicky. And wine just took that edge off. And, you know, you're not supposed to say that, but it did. And then when I took it away, I was confronted with my life. And like, I've not been dealing with stuff. I've not been dealing with my children's emotions. I've not been dealing with my relationships. I've not been dealing with where I find ourselves financially. Like, there's a lot of stuff that's happened. And I just like numb it out. You know, if I'm not busy, like, rushed off my feet, I'm having a drink because in both those, I don't have to think about actually what's going on.
It's so true though. I mean, we've got to be honest, it does give you that sense of ease and comfort. That first drink does do that. But unfortunately, for the majority of the world, that one drink's not enough. So it's
No,
like one
no.
drink gives you the ease and comfort, and then you're just drinking more and chasing that feeling the whole time. And it's just trying to replace that quick fix, that quick kind of dopamine hit of that glass of wine.
And I think that the big thing for me, because like I really struggled those 6 months and I couldn't understand why I wasn't settling into it and why it was so hard. And one of them was I was actually really angry at myself that I had got to this point, that I'd like allowed myself to get to that point. Now I know that it's an addictive substance and I was just self-medicating. You know, it wasn't my fault. It's just what I did. I was also angry at all the stuff in my life that I had let slide, stuff that I didn't give attention, things I didn't push back on, boundaries I let slip. So all that anger was actually because of me. And so I had to like face that. And I didn't know what alcohol did to me. I didn't know. Like, I can remember, like, I think it's Annie Grace who talks about when you pop the cork or screw the bottle and you get that glug, glug, glug sound, you know, and it goes in the glass and you take that sip. So she explains it that actually nothing chemical has happened in your system yet. It's purely your brain, your neural pathway that's learned. It's almost like Pavlov's dog, you know, I'm going to have this wine and I can hear that's the sound, that's the glass sound, that's the fridge. I'm pouring it. I already feel relaxed. I've not even had a sip yet. So it was all a self-created like fantasy almost, you know.
As do you know, we've been talking about that actually because the book club in the community, Rebecca, who's one of our Zoom hosts, she does book club every month, and the book this month is Dose, DOSE. So, I think it's TJ Power. So that's the book
Fantastic.
we're reading. Yeah, that's the book we're reading this month. And he did a podcast on the Mend with Matt Willis, and it's all about that. It's all about just getting the kind of the dopamine and the excitement before you've even actually put anything chemical into your body. So I'm looking for, I have started it and I love that book. I love learning. It's like you say, it's educating yourself, isn't it?
And learning like the science stuff, like learning what it actually does in your system, how it like spikes everything. I mean, I don't know, I can't say it exactly, the GABA and all this kind of thing, but if you could just educate yourself about what it does. I mean, I know that it causes cancer and I know all that stuff. And this sounds really weird, but that didn't really have as much impact on me as listening to when I drink a bottle of wine, this is what it's doing in my brain. And that's why I'm waking up at 3 o'clock in the morning with this absolute charging, racing heart, totally anxious, not able to sleep, getting to work like completely wired, so tired, but so I wouldn't be able to sleep because there's a scientific reason. And then charging through the day and then getting and saying, I'm not drinking tonight, and getting to 2 o'clock and going, Oh my God, that was a bad day. I'm going to have just one tonight, and then it's a whole bottle again, you know? And once I understood that science, then I think it took the blame out of it a little bit. And I was like, oh, okay, so that makes sense. That now I understand it's not because I'm weak or I've got no willpower, that if everybody started drinking every day a bottle of wine, they would get to where I was, you know? So, well, that's kind of my theory. I know some people wouldn't agree with that, but you know, you start using something and it works for you, and then you just have to use it more and more, and then you find yourself in a bit of a pickle, literally.
Just what you're saying there about the different sort of mood sort of receptors that are in your body. I'm sorry, I can't think of the right words, but all your serotonin and your endorphin and all these sort of things. I think again in that sort of first year and even beyond, really, for me, it takes a while for you to work out actually what stimulates you and what you enjoy, what you like doing, what you're about. Because for years, you know, I was 49 when I stopped drinking, and for years I didn't know what made me tick. You know, and I think again, you know, for that first year, you spend a lot of it angry. You find a lot of it sort of like finding yourself. You know, you're finding yourself. You're working out who you are, what makes you happy, what stimulates you, and that's hard as well, isn't it? Because you go down a few sort of blind alleys. You think you're this, you think you're that. You're trying things that don't quite work. And I think what I'm getting at, and I think what we were moving on to there, Lauren, is just that first year is quite a challenge, but obviously, you're way past that now. You're 2.5 years down the line. Tell us now a bit about how your life is. How is it now compared to what it was like, you know, 2.5 years ago? And you've still got a crazy family, not crazy in that way, crazy as in very busy. Tell us a bit about what life looks like now and what it, you know, do you ever think what it looks like, what it could look like if you'd kept going the way you were?
From the outside, it probably doesn't look much different because I'm still in the same job, live in the same house. You know, my kids are all doing different things. But me as a person, I am a completely different person. I am, you know, if I think back, I was like a tortured soul. I did not like myself. I had no self-esteem. I had no confidence. I looked like I did on the outside, but inside I was like overthinking everything, riddled with anxiety. And now I'm like, I know exactly who I am. I know exactly what I like. And it's not like I sorted, it just came naturally over time that, you know, I'm not afraid to speak my mind. When I was drinking a lot, I used to be quite argumentative because I have a big mouth. And now I've found a lot of power in the fact that I can pull away from something. And just like not feel the need to comment, you know, if there's a certain person and I'll just go, it's not worth it. And not feel anything about it. Just go, they're an idiot. I don't need, whereas before I'd be like, I need to be right. I need to prove my point. And now I've got that like calmness, you know. If I think back, the only thing that I enjoyed doing, and I would never admit it to myself then, was having a glass of wine or sitting in the garden having a glass of wine or reading my book and having a glass of wine or watching TV having a glass of wine. It was always about the wine. And it's taken time, and I won't lie about this because it does. I've discovered that I can do things like go out for dinner, do running, meet friends, read, like loads of things. And I enjoy it, but it's like pure joy. It's a bit like when you take a dog for a walk. This sounds hilarious. And they're like in a field and they're so excited and they're like running around and everything is new and fresh. That's what sober is like. You know, once you get over all the crappy bit, it's like every day is like new and fresh. And, you know, I can't wait for the next day, for the next thing, because I'm really comfortable in my skin and it affects all my life because my kids treat me better. You know, they respect me, they're proud of me. So it means that I carry more weight in my conversations with them. When I say something, they listen. Okay, not always, let's be honest. But you know, like they value what I say and they're really proud of me. And that fills my cup and it gives me that extra self-esteem and it makes me feel better because I was really struggling. And only now looking back do I realize how bad my mental health was and in what a terrible dark place I was. You know, I have struggled my whole life with my mental health and you know, I'd have these massive extremes. And now I don't have that anymore. I'm just like in the middle. I was very famous for catastrophizing things. I can still do that a bit, but I just feel calm and I'm just excited about life. You know, I just turned 50. I don't think I've ever been happier than I am now. And nothing has changed. I still have no money. I still need to live 10 kilos. You know? My house is still a mess, but just it's an internal thing. It's an inside internal thing in your head. And I don't think we realize the value and power of the self in your mind, how you
Yeah.
feel about yourself. Because if you don't like yourself, you can't be anything to anybody. You can't be a good friend, a good wife, a good daughter, anything.
That's the thing, just what you said. There's like having no money and house still a mess and all this, same here. It's like external things don't fix it, and we're constantly looking for something external, or if it's a drink, if it's chocolate, if it's buying something, we're constantly looking for that. And it's not until you take alcohol out of the system that's quieting those feelings and those thoughts and those moods, that quietens them down, brings them back. You don't think about it, and it quietens them back down again. It's not until you have it removed for a while that you can then start to kind of get a bit of clarity and understanding about what you're thinking, what you're feeling, like know your worth. That self-esteem thing, that was me as well. My self-esteem was in my books and I didn't even realize it. And it's so important to every other aspect in your life.
Yeah, and it's taken time. Like, if I think back to how I felt and how I thought about myself, if you'd asked me then, I wouldn't have said I felt like that. But now that I feel like this now, you know,
Yeah.
and I feel a bit empowered, you know, like if I want to do something or I put my mind to something, I really feel like I can do it now because I've overcome this, you know. And it's not big and dramatic, like I said. And I think, you know, like you always talk, Kelly, about people always think they have to be hit rock bottom and, you know, all these things. But you know, you don't have to be miserable. Why do we
Yeah.
have to live miserably? And if I hadn't have just tried, I wouldn't be where I am now, you know. And I'm not a person that like lectures people about alcohol. You do you, friend. I'm not passionate about your life. I do lecture my children, but that's my job, you know. But I can see it in people's eyes. I see people all day, like all over the place, in my workplace, in my life, friends, family. People in the supermarket, I can see it in their eyes. I can spot that kind of like internal sort of dialogue and dread and unhappiness with themselves. And they just need to take a chance and try it, you know, and accept that this is your. There's that lovely book. What's the girl called? I forget her name. We Are the Luckiest. It's a fabulous book. And she has a line in it where she says, "It's not fair, whatever, but I'm sorry, this is your thing, but this is your thing. And this is my thing. And I've had to make peace with it." And, you know, once I've accepted and made peace with it, it's gotten easier.
Yeah, just picking up on what you're saying there, just whilst you were chatting, I have real trouble articulating this, so hopefully I get the point across. But when I first stopped drinking, and I was almost on this mission to create this perfect life for myself. I thought, right, I've stopped drinking. I want some rewards for not drinking. I want to make my life perfect. And what I've realized sort of gradually, and I can't believe it's took me this long, is life's never perfect. Life is never perfect. You have bad days. People still piss you off. Things still go wrong. You know, sometimes you wake up, you're tired and you can't explain it. You know, and I've still got on a bit of an emotional roller coaster in my life. I'm still up and down, da, da, da. But I'm better at stepping back and just seeing it for that. And it's like you said before, you know, I don't feel I've got to, you know, accept every invite for an argument that passes my way. You know, if everyone else is bickering, let them get on and bicker. Things are still going wrong. It's just I'm not getting myself immersed in it. And I think that's what I find the sort of the not the beauty in, but I find just relaxes me is just day to day, whatever's going on, I'm just a lot more balanced. Does that make sense? And never going to be perfect, is it? Because, you know, life's tough. Things are hard. Like life's hard. It's not a beach, is it? Do you know what I mean? It's not a constant beach. That's why you have holidays. That's why you have breaks from things, because things are difficult day to day. And it's just, I don't know, it took me a while to get there. You're probably nodding now thinking, yeah, Ian, that's pretty obvious. But it took me a long time to
No,
get
I
there.
think it does. It's not until you get that kind of bit of space behind it, you start to realize that actually everything's fine, like, things do pass. You start to, like, if you have a bad day, you're like, there's a good day coming. Like, you just trust the process that a good day's coming. That's how I kind of work on a daily basis. I couldn't think like that before. I was either in the past or catastrophizing the now
Yes.
and the future. Do you know that way, where it's
Yes.
just kind of trusting, right, this is a bit of a crap day, but tomorrow I'll feel better.
Now, Lauren, I want to talk about something that I remember we talked about this a while ago, and you played it down massively. And I hope you're not going to do it again, because you last year ran your first ever marathon, didn't you?
I did, yes.
And you did your best to play it down. I remember talking about it, and you were like, yeah, as if like it's just one of those things everybody does. And I remember chatting, and I remember they said, Lauren, you've just ran a marathon. You've got to give yourself some credit. So tell us a bit about this, where you were before you decided to run a marathon, what the training was like, and how, and now do you feel proud of yourself now? They're the three questions I've got.
Okay, so I'll try to remember the question. So I've always run. It's always been like I've always enjoyed running. And I think, like I said before, I think running kept me in drinking for a bit because it was like, oh, I can run, therefore I can drink, you know. And I know there are loads of people that do that. Anyway, but I've always wanted to do a marathon. And then as I got closer to 50, I thought, I think that ship sailed, you know, it's not going to happen. And I had all these excuses. Oh, I can't train for a marathon because my kids do loads of sports on the weekend. So, you know, they come first. I don't have time. I'm old. I'm this, that, the next thing. And I met this friend, Sarah, through work. And which is also another funny story because I would never have been friends with her because she doesn't drink. She's just never drunk. And so I would never develop the friendship when my drinking days because I would have gone, oh, she's so fun. She's actually hilarious. But anyway, so we started running together, and I don't normally run with people because it's like that self-confidence thing. And she said, "Do you want to do a marathon?" And I said, "No, I will not be doing a marathon." And then she's like, "We could do a marathon." I said, "I don't want to do a marathon. I can't commit to the training. Blah, 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 blah. I'll never finish because I've never been really good at finishing anything or being consistent, especially in the old drinking days." And then she said, "We both turned 50 in November." And she said, "We could do a marathon before we turn 50, and that's it. We just do it, and no one needs to know." So we started training together, and it was brutal. The training is very difficult, and so I had a plan up on the fridge, and I had to stick to it because otherwise I wouldn't be able to do it. You know, I'm not a natural athlete. I'm not, you know, my friend Sarah, she's like a gazelle. She just goes. You know, I do not look like a runner, and I don't run like a runner. I just do it. Podcast in, off I go, me and the dog. Anyway, so we did do the marathon in Chester, and I initially I was like a bit disappointed because I didn't get the time I wanted. But after sitting with it for a bit, I was like, oh my God, I ran a marathon. I can't, you know, I did that. And actually, it's not even the marathon that I'm proud of, it's the training, you know, because, you know, my girls play football. They can have two games on a Saturday, one on a Sunday, training 6 days a week. So I would have to get up, like, some Saturdays at 4 in the morning, go do 28K before, you know, because I couldn't just run in, and I don't like running in the evenings, you know. So it was a huge commitment. So once I like processed it, I was like, there was a plan and I stuck to it. Come hell or high water. You know, I leaned on you guys in the chats, like, help me, please. I'm dying out here. I've got 10 more cakes to go. But yeah, so I'm proud that I did the training. You know,
Good.
I would never have done
Yeah.
that. I would never have done that. And, you know, there's a few things like that I do now that I, you know, people say, oh, where'd you get your willpower from? But I don't think it's willpower. I think it's like self-belief, and confidence. Like if I say or decide something, I have enough love of myself and integrity in myself now that I won't let myself down
Yeah.
within reason. Like,
Resilience, isn't it?
obviously,
It's resilience that you build.
Resilience, yeah.
It is resilience, and resilience is so important. And it's one of the things that I see with students at school that is lacking in young people is that resilience. As soon as things are hard and difficult and uncomfortable, then we don't want to do it anymore. And stopping drinking is very uncomfortable. It is the most uncomfortable thing I have ever done in my life. So I think having done that and then deciding to do this marathon was like a full circle. But it did take me a while to kind of like wrap my head around and process it. So yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
I think, I mean, when you talk about your running, Lauren, I mean, if anyone asked me to describe Lauren, I would say she's lovely, bubbly, hilarious, and the most consistent, disciplined person I know. Because I don't think, even you, Ian, you've done great runs, but I've never known someone to be so, this is my plan, and the times don't change. When she's running for that week, she's running. I just think it's amazing. So the fact that you're saying you're proud of yourself today makes me smile, because I remember we did this in the community and you were like, oh, but I didn't get the time I wanted. And I was like, what? So it's great to hear you saying you're proud of yourself now. Love it.
I'm proud that I did the training. I mean, it was hard. It's difficult, you know. But I say to my girls, if anything, stopping drinking has taught me that I can do hard things. And they can do hard things. They hate me because I'm full of all these quotes and I'm always reading, I'm always listening to a podcast about self-development, and then I'm sharing it with them. And then I can
Yeah.
stop in the chat now, Mom. Please, can we
My
just
voice is the same. My voice is exactly the
stop? But it's just, I think when you go on this journey, you learn so much about yourself, and there's lots of things you learn that you don't like about yourself, and you have to sit with that. And that's the hard part, and some of those things I can't fix. There are parts of my personality that are not great, and it keeps coming up. But I have to work with what I got, kind of thing. But I think with alcohol, we just hide from things. We just hide and we ignore and we put it in a box, and it will always come back and bite you every time.
I think what you just said there is brilliant. We're all parents, the three of us, and I know we've all spoke about our children over the years, and like I wouldn't go as far as to say my kids will ever say to me, "Dad, I'm so glad you stopped drinking." But I think they hopefully in years to come might say something like, "Dad, I'm so glad you taught me X, Y, and Z, or you told me this, that, and the other." And I wouldn't have told them those things. I wouldn't have had those beliefs. I wouldn't have had that determination had I not stopped drinking. So they won't say, "Dad, I'm so glad you don't drink," but they'll say, "Dad, I'm so glad you did this, that, and the other." And I think that applies to all of us. I think we've all, become better parents for not drinking.
I think as a parent, when you remove alcohol from your life, that is the biggest win. What we can pass on and teach our kids, because there's so much there that okay, when obviously, my drinking was really bad being an alcoholic, but not everyone's like that. And you do teach your kids respect. And obviously, I have as well. My boys are great, but you teach them respect and kindness and all these things. But when you remove the alcohol, you learn so much about yourself and you start to educate yourself and start to read and listen to things that you would never have listened to before. And you pass that on, even when you're not trying to. I mean, I try and force it down my kids' throat, which is very annoying for them. But even when you're not trying, they do pick up on things. And I think that is the biggest plus about removing alcohol from your life.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like my kid, my girl, not my little ones, obviously, but my big girls, they drink. My husband still drinks. I mean, I've got a whole liquor cabinet in my house. I'm not like one of those no to alcohol, but I do tell them the information now, the things that I wish someone had told me, when I was in my early 20s and I was really struggling, and when I had severe postnatal depression when my two big girls were born. No one ever told me, put the wine down. It's making it worse. Nobody had that conversation. And it's not just saying, oh, put the wine down. It's like, this is why it does this and this and this. Oh, okay. Like if you eat a bag of salt, you will be poisoned. You know what I'm trying to say? There was no like scientific explanation, because I think that's where it all started for me, when I had my kids from postnatal depression. It just, then I would have the wine as a pick me up, because I used to also use drinking as an energizer.
Me too.
So like I was ironing with the wine, vacuum with the wine, like, okay, I can do this. I can blitz this house, do the ironing, get everything ready. I'll just open a bottle of wine, and I know people do that. And so like one of my daughters struggles with her mental health quite a lot, and she's got anxiety. And I've had really honest conversations with her saying, you and I, we're the same, so just be careful. I'm not saying don't drink at all. I'd never say that. It's you on your own. Your story's not my story. But just know that if you're gonna have loads of drinks over like the course of the weekend, on Monday, you're gonna feel worse than everybody else because you struggle with anxiety, you struggle with low mood. Put that in there, prepare yourself, know what it is. These are all things that we teach them.
I think as well, the biggest kind of teaching around it's not just having those conversations. It's like you hear all these things as a teenager and a young person, you hear all these things, and you're like, it won't happen to me. I won't feel like that. So I think having someone tell you those things, but also they can look at you and think, geez, my mum's having a great time. Like my mum's enjoying life and doing all these things, not drinking. So it's not just about the education, it's about, I hate that saying, but being that lighthouse as well, isn't it? It's showing them that actually there is a life out there without alcohol. So if you do struggle with anxiety and mental health, it's okay. There's this beautiful period over here where you don't actually need alcohol.
And I think that's also like been such a lesson for me, because I grew up in a family and a country and a culture where everyone drinks. They drink every day. You don't enjoy yourself without alcohol. It's at every occasion, and I was like, oh, how will I ever enjoy a birthday party? How will I enjoy a meal? How will I enjoy a sunset? How will I like do all these things without wine? And I'll be honest that for the first year and a half, I didn't enjoy them. And I'll be honest and I'll say that. But I had to learn. And now I can think of nothing worse than having a glass of wine, because how will I remember this? How will I taste the food? How will I, like, I've been to parties, and I've been dancing till 1 in the morning, proper dancing, not falling all over and thinking I am dancing. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
A whole different experience. It does take time to get there, but and then get in my car, drive home. It's great.
Yeah.
I've got to say, last week, Kelly, we talked about the buzzwords that we were going to out. We were going to out some buzzwords from the alcohol-free life, and you just landed one without realizing it. Did you hear
Yeah,
yourself?
I'm actually
You've
kind
just said
of
lighthouse.
I felt a little
So
bit stressed when I said that.
this week's chosen wanky
Lighthouse. Let's all
buzzword
be lighthouses.
is lighthouse. But it's good. Lighthouse,
Yeah.
it does what it says in the tin, doesn't it? It's
Lighthouse.
there for it's a buzzword for a reason, because we are lighthouses. But the word makes me shudder. But
It does.
yeah.
And
Yeah. Lauren, before we wrap this up, I'm conscious you have got things to do. My third thing I always think about when I think about you, so I think about levitating with rage. I think about how anyone can underplay a marathon, their first ever marathon. And I think about custard creams.
Oh,
Because you have a love for you single-handedly, I reckon, are keeping the UK
I love
custard cream production
custard
going, aren't you? And what you've discovered is actually, because on some of the chats we talk about running, and we talk about like diet and exercise and nutrition and stuff, and you made me feel better because it was at a time when we were talking about like energy and just, that if you talk about all these energy gels and stuff that people sort of
Yeah.
like, that you take when you go running and stuff, all it is glucose. And you said, yeah, well, I just, quickly shove three custard creams down me gob and off I go out. And it
And a
does the
cup of
same thing,
tea.
doesn't it? Yeah.
Yeah,
And a cup of
that's
tea.
the same thing. Yeah, I know. I love my custard creams. And I ate a lot of custard creams, lots of tea and biscuits when I wasn't the early days of not drinking. Yeah, but that's my marathon trick. Three custard creams, big cup of Yorkshire tea. You'll smash it. Couple in your vest. But I like the Aldi ones. It's only the Aldi ones that are my favorite. Yeah.
We're not
But
sponsored by
that's
Aldi, we're not
normal.
that slick yet, but yeah.
But that's also another thing is that, doing the marathon and that, and you start Googling and people give you information. And I think quite often we get overwhelmed by stuff because we don't have that inner confidence. And I was just like, you know what? I'm just going to do my own thing. I'm just going to do what feels right for me. I don't want to eat porridge before I do a marathon. I know everyone says eat the porridge. I'm not eating the porridge because I don't normally eat that early. So I'm going to have a custard cream. If it gets really bad, I'll go to the McDonald's. It must be in Chester McDonald's. I just like, we'll just work with it. But I feel confident enough to like just do my thing without having to like be worried about other people, especially when you're starting at the race and they've all got their fancy kits and there I am in
Oh, I
my
know.
running leggings that are 12 years old and my funny little phone. And I'm like, yeah, here we go. Three custard creams. And also stop and take
Amazing.
pictures and put it in the group chat. And the kids are like, Mum, focus, you're supposed to be running.
Actually, and there's one thing I've
Know.
forgotten as well. I'm seeing you on Sunday.
Yes, at the 10K.
Because tell everyone what we're doing on Sunday. Yeah.
We're going to go to Milton Keynes, Old Cold. It's Old Cold Change, isn't it?
It
10K.
is, yeah.
Yeah. I'm excited about that. And I convinced my daughter to do 5K. So she's going to do that. I tried to get her to do 10, but she wasn't having it. So yeah. And then we get to see all of each other not on a screen.
I'm feeling a little bit sad because I chose to do the virtual run for the Alcohol Change UK event. So I will be in Glasgow myself running around a park. So I will be expecting some sort of video call when he's all finished.
Yes, we will. Yeah,
So
we will.
10 o'clock on
We'll hook
Sunday,
up
isn't
in
it?
some way.
Yeah.
It's going to be fun. It'll be great. Yeah.
It
And also,
is.
like, just going back to like, if people are, thinking about stopping drinking and think all their lives will be over, I've made such lovely friends. Like, I feel like I have a whole army of people, like, truly on my side, in my pocket at any time. And that's something really special.
Yeah, no, brilliant. I think that's what we're trying to get across with these chats is, we're all very different, but we're all very normal. And if anyone who is listening to this for the first time is thinking to themselves, God, I could do with something like that, I think, the three of us hopefully have given the clear sort of answer that we're normal. And why don't you come along and give the community a go? On that front, Kelly, why don't you tell people bit about the community and how they can join, and if they've got any questions, who they need to get in touch with.
So if you want to join the community or find out more, go to the website alcoholuncensored.co.uk, or you'll find us on Instagram or Facebook, and my inbox is always open. So send as many questions as you want. I'll be happy to answer them. I'll be happy to jump on a Zoom with you and have a chat. If you want to have a trial Zoom, we can sort that out as well. We just want to help as many people find the joy in alcohol-free life. And I think community is the key for that. Like there's so much evidence with the friends that we've made and the things that we've been able to take part in just because we took the plunge and joined an online community that's not full of internet weirdos, it's full of lovely people like us.
Yeah. Sounds expensive, this alcohol uncensored, Kelly. It sounds like it's going to cost you a fortune a month. What's it going to cost you?
Just the price of a good bottle of wine. Not that I would know how much that costs because I drank cheap wine, but yeah, £19.99 a month. And again, there's no contract. So, and with that, you get there's rooms every single day. Lauren's one of our Zoom hosts, Ian, yourself, I host some. We've got Susan, Rich, and Andy at the moment. So there's a good variety of Zooms. Some of the Zooms are just like having a chat. Lauren actually and Susan did a Zoom on Sunday, and the topic was dry January articles, and it was really interesting. It was really good, wasn't it, Lauren?
Yeah.
And this week, myself and Susan are talking about the whole moderation thing. How that voice starts to creep into your head and tell you, ah, I'm fixed. It's a good idea to have a drink.
Oh.
So we have general chats, but we have right good topic Zooms as well. And within the app, you've got the forum. It's a little bit like a news, like a Facebook news feed, a little bit like that, except it's just in the app, which is secure and no one else outside the community can see it. You can download the app even if you're not a member, and there's some stuff in there, but you can't get access to the members forum and the groups until you're actually a member.
Yeah. Come on, folks. If you found this podcast somehow, give it a go. Sign up. You've got nothing to lose. Lauren, that was ace. Thank you so much.
Thank
And I will see you on Sunday. And Kelly will see you virtually,
Yeah,
not
see you then.
IRL, virtually on
Yeah,
Sunday.
virtually. Thanks very much, Lauren. It's been absolutely amazing. You've fair cheered me up after a hard week. Thank you.
Thanks very
All
much.
right.
Thank you.
Here comes the
Bye.
jingle. See you, everyone.